Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis in for Carrie Miller. The Vikings play their last preseason game this week against the Titans. The team will choose its 53-man roster, and we will be off. A new season, a new chance for the Vikings, the team that came achingly close to the Super Bowl. Nope. I was going to play some... Hey, Johnny. Ah, remember that. We finally got the tape there, and then they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. So what are the team's chances this year? Joining me now is Andy Carlson, host of the Vikings for the Win podcast. Hi, Andy.
They didn't lose. They just got soul crushed.
Yeah. It's true. They got soul crushed. And Arif Hassan is going to be here, but he ran into that traffic that Kathy Werzer was talking about. But Andy, you guys host a podcast together, the Zone Coverage Football Machine podcast, and you say that he kind of runs late all the time.
It's very hashtag on brand for Arif. Also, that was pretty funny, too. It's like when your producer reached out, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds fun. It's like, and then also... Arif Hassan will be there. I was like, ah. It's great.
You're ready for this.
Yeah.
All right. So even though Arif is not here, you can call in. What do you want to see from the team this year? Do you have questions about who's going to make the final roster and why? Call with your questions or complaints or your heartfelt comments, how the Vikings have broken your heart in the past. Number 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. So Andy, what was the takeaway from last year for Coach Zimmer and the Vikings? What did they need?
Well, it was a very fun magic carpet ride, and us Vikings fans who are relatively young, we've had that before. Like for me, it was really big '98. Like that was just a great fun season. You throw '09 in there as well, but I mean, last year it was great because it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Where Sam Bradford got hurt and Teddy was still dealing with injury, and then it's like, oh, Case Keenum, all right, so the backup guy, Jabroni from nowhere, but he just comes out and he plays lights out, he plays way over his skis, and it all capped off with that Minneapolis miracle where most Vikings fans were like, oh, here we go again. It's just another season of a sadness. We blew in the division round. We went 13-3, won the division, but then that where. I know it's like, sound takes a while to carry, but if you watch the video of the play, when Diggs catches that ball in bounds, there's like a second delay between people reacting. And I know it was because of sound carrying, but it was mainly because this doesn't happen to us.
No.
We don't have nice things. What happened?
And we had nice things, and it was the video. If you haven't watched it or haven't watched it recently, just I was watching it yesterday because I hadn't seen it since the winter, and it's just beautiful. And there's nobody around him; he's just running down the field. It was just a beautiful moment. So we should relish that. But they do want to get to the Super Bowl. They do. What, yep. So what have they done with the team this year?
Well, I think it was the safe move, bringing Kirk Cousins. As weird as it sounds to say, is like, hey, you're going to give him a record contract, fully guaranteed. But he didn't know what was going to happen with Teddy's health. Bradford's health has always been a big question mark. Case Keenum, last year was great, but it's also like, could you really do that again? Probably not. So
we shouldn't bet on it.
Yeah. So going out, making that big splash, also bring in Sheldon Richardson. Drafting my Qs out of Central Florida, who's a great talent as well. And it's like this defense comes back intact. You add more great pieces. And offensively, you added a guy who hopefully you're bringing stability to the quarterback position. It's like, let's do it again. Last year was fun. How about two in a row?
What is Cousins like? What is he? Where'd he come from? Tell us a little bit about him.
Kirk Cousins, in short, he's kind of dorky. Like, those great mic'd up sound FX clips where he's going around and talking about like Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones references. And he and offensive lineman Tom Compton, like they're BFFs, they talk about stargazing and whatnot. So He's from Michigan. Went to Michigan State. Oh, hi, Arif.
Arif arrived. Hi, Arif. He's settling in.
And in terms of just down to earth, like Midwestern, just good human being, like he is definitely that. And he's certainly a fringe top 12, top 10 quarterback in the NFL on a given day.
Arif, we're talking about Cousins. Are you ready to jump in?
Yeah, sure.
What do you think of him?
I think he does a very good job doing the specific things that he's been asked to do within the offense.
That sounds faint. Faint praise.
It's very difficult to evaluate someone who wasn't given a ton of faith at his previous organization, mm-hmm. I think, over and over and over again.
Hey, but when you think of good decisions and stability, you think of the Washington professional football team.
They're the model franchise, right? But I think that there's a lot to be proved with Cousins as a quarterback. I think, as I was walking in, Andy was talking about his character, which is...
Dorky, apparently.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. And
positive dork.
Yeah.
Very positive dork. It's very easy
to... We like dorks. It's public radio. We like dorks.
Yeah. It's very easy to, watch him talk a couple of times and get this impression that maybe he's not being very genuine. Mm-hmm. But that's not really it. He's a very genuine person who sometimes initially can kind of come off as...
He's very political at times, for lack of a better word. He's very tactful in what he presents.
Just kind of like what the modern quarterback is kind of expected to be.
Yeah, they say a few things, make sure it's nice and clean and family ready, and then
exactly.
move on.
Yeah. On the field, he operates really well within a structure. He thrives, I think, when you create a plan, things are going to plan. But in some ways, it's kind of the opposite of Case Keenum, who really, I think, thrived as an improviser. Mm-hmm. When the play broke down, he kind of had an instinct for what to do. For Cousins, I don't know that he's as much of an improviser. And so the Vikings will have to make sure they've got contingencies in place.
Yeah, like Case Keenum would be great at jazz. Kirk Cousins would be, I need sheet music for this concerto.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. And I think when they're both kind of operating at their peak, mm-hmm. when they're both in kind of their ideal situations, when you've got Keenum in a sandlot situation and Cousins in kind of like a very structured offense, I think Cousins is the better quarterback by a fair margin. But you can't always put quarterbacks in the ideal situation.
Yeah. All right. I want to make sure people know who you are, Arif. Arif Hassan is here. He covers the Vikings for The Athletic. Welcome. Happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm still a little out of shape.
Yeah, take your time. Well, I'm going to give out the phone numbers, then we're going to go to a call here. So if you have a question for Arif or Andy, call 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Zach in Plymouth. Hi, Zach.
Hi, yeah. Very excited to be watching the season. I usually have to watch the games out in Ann Arbor, where I live in Michigan. But I was excited to watch how close we got last year. And I was wondering, for all you guys, in the preseason games this year, are we seeing a particular strategy or focus for the team that's going to push us through all the way? Or is it just be well-rounded and try to do a little better than last year, or, just get lucky?
I think that for the preseason, the approach has been pretty standard. It's a good way to evaluate the players that you have, but also it kind of hides what your long-term strategies are going to be. One of the reasons the Vikings brought in John DeFilippo is because he's been such an innovator where he's been at. Mm-hmm. He was a big part of helping design that Philadelphia offense. He did a bunch of new things in Cleveland. And we're not seeing much innovation in the preseason, which I don't think is very alarming. It's just something that you tend to see kind of happen in the preseason. So we haven't seen many long-term strategies. We've seen not even a tendency to use play action as often as we expect them to during the season, something that Cousins is very good at. We haven't even seen Dalvin Cook for more than 2 carries, 3 snaps.
Yeah.
So,
but I think something you can take away from the preseason, even though it has been pretty vanilla and they have looked a little bit helter-skelter times going against pretty good defenses in Jacksonville and Seattle, is that the Cousins-Diggs chemistry is legit.
Yeah, it's like, pretty on point.
Like money hitting money, and it's like, ooh, this could be big. Also, even though Dalvin only got a couple of carries against Seattle. It's like the fact that he's run without a brace, the fact that he's looked really good in practice is just like, oh, yeah, don't forget about that guy. He's going to be great.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Delvin is seeking at contact is a big thing because sometimes you've got players that are medically cleared that are a little bit nervous to play and it impacts their ability to play.
Yep.
And I think the fact that Dalvin Cook is pretty aggressive about seeking contact, I think, is a good indication that he's ready to be back in full form. But yeah, no super interesting wrinkles to point out. I think at the goal line, they've run the same three plays throughout the preseason. And some of them, they just repeated them one after the other. So
is John DeFilippo uncreative? My call.
Right. So yeah, there's a lot, I think, to take away from the preseason, but most of them are just, how is this individual player doing in this situation? Mm-hmm. And not, how does the unit as a whole, cohere, right? Because there's a lot of things that have yet to be implemented.
What other injuries are out there? There's a couple people sitting on the sidelines.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm. Who's going to make it into the final roster, when who's going to be possibly in later, but right now is not...
Pat Elflein is the main concern.
Yeah,
and it's not so much the ankle from what I gather. It's more the shoulder, and it vacillates from day to day. So he may not be ready to start the season. But also, the thing about this time of year is you're going to notice a lot of the fringe roster guys getting dinged up and maybe sitting out of practice because now it comes in sort of the gamesmanship of our teams trying to hide players in the fourth preseason game so they can get them on the practice squad or even potentially IR them to keep them in the sphere if they weren't going to make the roster, but you don't want to risk them on the practice squad. So also, it's overly precautious. I mean, the season is very near upon us, but and take some of these injury reports with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Yeah. I just pulled up the list of absences from the most recent practice. It's it's pretty significant. I'll skip some of the players that are less likely to be in conversations about roster bubbles. So on the receiver side, there's a lot of discussions about who the fifth or sixth receiver is going to be. Veteran Tavares King, second-year player Stacy Coley, even Chad Beebe, who has looked pretty good in the preseason, was held out of the most recent practice.
Yeah, quote-unquote.
Right. And then you've got a couple of offensive linemen that are a little bit less concerning, someone like Josh Andrews, who plays guard center. But at cornerback, we're missing starter Trey Waynes, potential starter Mackenzie Alexander, first-round pick pushing for a starting spot, Mike Hughes, as well as the returner Marcus Sherrills. So there's been a couple of people missing. We just got Brandon Zylstra back.
It's weird with Waynes. He's just gone.
Yeah.
And, like, no explanation.
And sometimes these aren't necessarily injuries. Sometimes they're dealing with a personal issue back home.
Okay.
So, maybe it's not as concerning as it seems.
Or Wayne's really wanted to hit up the fair midweek before it's too busy.
If they can get parking.
Yeah,
right.
651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Jared in St. Paul. Hi, Jared.
Hey there.
You have a question or comment?
Yeah, so I've been really encouraged by what I've been seeing out of Laquon Treadwell in the preseason. I'm wondering if you guys think it's going to translate to a breakout year for him.
Yeah, I think you can get your hopes up about Treadwell in year three. I think you have to shed the, oh, he's a first-round pick, so
right.
He should be a wide receiver 1A or 1B. It's like, that ain't going to happen with Diggs and Thielen in the building. But he can play a role on third down in the red zone where he's looked pretty good. And this sizzle. But actually, right now, like this, it won't stay this way. But right now, I think Cousins and Treadwell are more on the same page than Cousins and Thielen.
Yeah. I mean, there are some pretty clear, I'm not going to say concerns, but chemistry issues to overcome with Cousins and Thielen and Cousins and Kyle Rudolph. But none, I think, with Laquon Treadwell, who I think is on pace to have a 400-500 yard year, which I think would be pretty big for him as a wide receiver three. And, breakout is a relative term. A breakout year for a first-round pick is usually getting close to 1,000 yards. In this case, that's not reasonable because of the talent that they have, the starting two wide receivers. So for him, it would be being pretty consistent on third down and converting first downs, being consistent in the red zone, maybe 4 or 5, possibly 6 touchdowns, which would be a pretty high touchdown to yardage ratio. And overall, getting around 500 yards. And I think what we've seen in practice, what we've seen in the preseason, kind of both indicate that. And Treadwell's concerns were technical and mental mm-hmm. coming into this year. He had to make sure that he was, you know, doing all of the small stuff, making sure he's running routes at the right route depth, getting his timing right, attacking
not running
the ball.
5 million stairs because not everything is a Nike commercial.
Right, yeah. He used to work so hard that he would, before and after practices, run stairs, and then during practice he'd be too tired to do the specific technical corrections he needed to do. It seems like, you know, Zimmer's kind of gotten through to him on working smarter, not necessarily just harder. And I think it's paid dividends.
What mental blocks does he have? You're talking about mental. Is it just that, like how to work smarter, or is there something else?
So he's a fairly young player coming out of a college offense that doesn't have, I guess we'd call them landmarks. You know, you run 12 yards and then you turn at a certain angle and then you're open on a corner route, or you run 14 yards and you come back on a comeback route. Those specific yardage markers weren't present in the Ole Miss offense. And that's, you know, people tend to think that that's true of every spread offense. He was specifically, I think, in an air raid offense, just a type of spread offense. And that's not necessarily true of every spread offense, but it is a feature of a lot of them. And because he missed a lot of time because of the broken leg and because he came out as a fairly young player, he just didn't have that much time to work on the technical receiving aspects that have nothing to do with the spread offense, as well as he had that additional barrier of learning how an NFL offense operates with those specific landmarks.
Yeah. Also, just humility-wise, like out of high school, coming out of the greater Chicagoland area, like he was like a five-star,
yeah,
numero uno recruit, goes down to Ole Miss, the big old bad SEC, dominates down there, and then all of a sudden comes the Vikings. He's running behind some jabroni from Detroit Lakes. He's like, this guy tough for the ego. But he's working through it.
Yeah, he was part of an unusually rich class of five-star athletes at Ole Miss, which I think
it's weird how that happened.
We've learned a little bit more about.
Yeah.
John in Minneapolis says there are contract issues as well. What do we make mm-hmm. of Anthony Burr's lack of contract extension?
I think he's going to play it out. Like, I think he's betting on himself, mainly because his position, 4-3 outside linebacker, it's kind of capped at how much you can get, whereas Zimmer strongly hinted, and all the signs seem to point that he's going to be more active rushing the edge, which is a much more premium position. So I think he sees, like, you know, I could take this 4-3 outside linebacker contract, or I could be pressing for more money if I become more of an edge presser, whether it be here or somewhere else, or I get franchise tag. It's like, whatever. Like, I understand his likely line of thinking.
Yeah, his position is probably the second least valued position in terms of contract money on NFL rosters behind safety, at least on the defense.
Well, fullback would be one except for Juszczyk.
Right. there's three linebackers making $11 million or more, off-ball linebackers. There are 12 or 13 edge rushers that are making $11 million or more, and some of them make up to $20 million. So the position that he plays, obviously it plays a big role in how much he'll get paid. And he came out of college thinking he was an edge rusher because that's what he did in college. And he was converted to this off-ball linebacker position. He's had a couple of great years there, a couple of pretty poor years there. And so I think his agent wants him to have more blitzing opportunities and get paid something like $11 million if he has to be a linebacker, or potentially seek out those opportunities. So it may take some time to get this contract situation resolved, but the Vikings have been very good about keeping the people that they want to keep. So this is not something I'm super concerned about, but we may end up taking it to the wire. And they took it to the wire with Everson Griffin. That turned out just fine. They've taken it to the wire with a couple of players.
Plus with Barr, you can tell, like, there's a sentimental value. Like, Barr was Zimmer's first draft pick, first also, you know, converting position. So that's always a leap of faith. He wears the green dot. He gets the defense set up. It's like, I wouldn't be shocked if he's captain this year either.
Right, yeah. And also in 2014, 2015, the way that he played the position was really crucial for how the defense was designed. And it was specific to his unique talents. He had remarkable fluidity, incredible athleticism. He ran faster than most wide receivers did at his pro day, and he weighs like 40 pounds more. It's unreal athleticism. And it was a critical part of how that defense was designed for the first couple of years. Now they've kind of moved away from some of the tendencies that required that skill set. But the fact that it's still there might make it a priority for the Vikings.
call 1-800-651-2276000. Let me get that straight this time. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. I told people would call in with Vikings questions. No one's calling in. These people called. Alex in Duluth. Minnesota native Chad Beebe has been talked about being the potential next Adam Thielen. What are your thoughts about him making the 53-man roster? Why are you laughing at that? You're breaking Alex's heart.
Well, you know, we're going with the white wide receiver tropes.
Yeah,
just
more
like
about that.
Zylstra, just like Jake Wienicke. It's just like, oh, Chad Beebe coming in. Is he more Edelman or is he more Wes Welker? I don't really know. But, yeah, initially I was pretty down on Beebe. Didn't have a lot of great college production, even as a special teamer, punt returner. Not great measurables, dealt with a lot of injuries, and even came in training camp. He had an injury right out of the gate and is, quote-unquote, dinged up now. But he's shown a little something.
Yeah.
But also, like, the bottom of the roster receivers haven't really shown much either. Like, Corey Robertson may be the most disappointing player.
Everyone was very excited about Corey Robertson.
He's 90 out of 90 for me. It's like, he was my son. We gave you $50,000 and you gave us.
Oh, yeah. He had an extraordinary signing bonus for an undrafted free agent. One of the projects that I put together every year is it's called a consensus big board. It takes all the draft rankings from 40 different analysts, and you end up with a board, a ranked order of 300 players. And the highest ranked player, besides Hercules Mataafa, who basically started the season out injured, was Corey Robertson. So it's kind of surprising that he hasn't flashed much in camp. But, you know, Brandon Zylstra was called the next Adam Thielen. Now it's Chad Beebe. And Andy's right. Early on, even in the rookie portion of training camp, Beebe struggled a lot in terms of getting separation, getting open. Andy mentioned he's got poor measurables. He's the son of Don Beebe, one of the fastest players that people can remember in
the NFL. We don't
know
that for sure.
and he runs a 4.65 40, which for a receiver is quite slow. In fact, it would be
2/10 slower than Anthony Barr.
It's 2/10. it's quite slow. But he's showed a lot in the preseason, and I think his showing later on in training camp and in the preseason shows he can earn that fifth or sixth receiver spot.
Also, I didn't even think about this. So Daddy Don was all on all those loser Bills teams. You know, son is on the 0-for-4 Vikings. But Don did reel off a ring with the Packers.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah.
Come on, son. Just make the Vikings. Come on.
Isn't Jake Wienicke kind of adorable, though?
Yeah.
Sure.
1-800-227-20-1-800. That's our number for our membership line. 1-800-242-2828. Mary in St. Cloud called. How much should we worry about the Vikings kicking woes? No more Kai, now what?
I'm not that worried.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
So I get it. My last name's Carlson. Kicker's name is Carlson. So every single time he
both
screws up,
under
like,
pressure.
I get a little something. Yeah. So, well, my pinned tweet now is never trust a Carlson. I think that one's going to stick around for a while. But you know, Carlson, he was a nail driver at Auburn, huge leg, struggled with some accuracy issues his senior season, but I don't think it's anything to be worried about. Working through some kinks, but you traded up and you took a kicker in the fifth round, which is very rare unless you're Tampa Bay. I know that Zimmer and Prefer are talking tough. It's like, oh, good kickers don't miss two in a row and blah, blah, blah. But he's going to be the kicker start the season, so we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily wise to release Forbeth this early just in case something like this happened. But also, kickers miss kicks. I would have been surprised if he hadn't missed a kick all preseason.
All right, you are listening to Minnesota Public Radio. I am Stephanie Curtis, sitting in for Carrie Miller. I'm here with Andy Carlson, host of the Vikings for the Win podcast, and Arif Hassan. He covers Vikings for The Athletic. And now we're going to go for a quick news update with Phil Picardi. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Stephanie. It took a cascade of criticism from veterans and others for President Trump to go from near silence to a recognition of what he called the late Senator John McCain's service to our country. He also ordered flags at the White House to again be lowered to half-staff. The lack of a formal statement and White House flags flying at half-staff only briefly had previously drawn strong criticism. Ripples from John McCain's death lap over today's primary contest in his home state of Arizona. Voters are picking candidates to replace McCain's seatmate in a contest that lays bare the fissures in the Republican Party in that state. Three Republicans are vying to replace Senator Jeff Flake, who is retiring after his fierce criticism of President Trump. All three of the candidates embrace Trump and distance themselves from McCain. There are also primaries in Florida and Oklahoma today. The preliminary trade deal with Mexico leaves open questions. Some wonder if President Trump can reach a replacement NAFTA deal with Mexico alone if Canada cannot be coaxed to come aboard. Trump has suggested he might leave Canada out. Critics have denounced that prospect. Others ask if the changes being negotiated threaten the operations of American and foreign companies that have built sophisticated supply chains and span the three countries. Congress would have to vote on the issue, but not until 2019. Experts in Maryland say the video gaming gunman's history of mental illness apparently would not have stopped him from buying guns before he killed two people and wounded 10 and then killed himself at a gaming tournament in Florida. Maryland law prevents someone from passing a background check to buy guns if they were either involuntarily committed for any period of time or voluntarily admitted to a psychiatric facility for at least 30 consecutive days. Neither applied to the gunman. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:32.
The UN calls it a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. It wants Myanmar's generals charged with genocide for their treatment of Rohingya Muslims. Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, won the Nobel Peace Prize. How did a country that promised peace and democracy end up accused of the most heinous crimes? Justice for the Rohingya. Next time on 1A.
1A is coming up at 10 a.m. here on NPR News. Programming is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping public radio advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Knight Foundation believes informed and engaged communities are essential for healthy democracy. More at knightfoundation.org. Programming is supported by the Bush Foundation, introducing the recipients of the 2018 Bush Fellowship. You can learn more about the 2018 Bush Fellows at bushfoundation.org/fellows. I'm Stephanie Curtis, sitting in for Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Are you a lifelong Vikings fan? Are you hopeful that the Vikings will make it all the way to the Super Bowl this year? Or are you bracing yourself for another season of heartbreak? Call right now, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. My guests are Andy Carlson, host of the Vikings for the Win podcast, and Arif Hassan. He covers the Vikings for The Athletic. And they've got a podcast together called the Zone Coverage Football Machine Podcast. Let's go to the phones. Todd in St. Paul. Hi, Todd. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pleasure to be on the program. I and many Minnesotans are still in shock from the performance against the Eagles. Does your guest think that the coach, our coach, and especially the defense have dealt properly with what happened?
I think that was definitely one of those, everyone has a garbage day, and everyone had it all on the same day, which is kind of fortunate.
Yeah, I think in terms of the coaching errors, especially defensively, there were a couple, but sometimes, you know, players just get beat even on the right call. I think one of the more famous examples is Zach Ertz beating Harrison Smith in man coverage. Not something you see very often. In terms of kind of processing it, taking what they need to and not dwelling too much on it at the same time, I think they've most likely, you know, I don't know what's in their heads, but I think they've most likely taken the right approach. They know kind of what lessons that they've needed to learn. They brought in someone from the offense to see kind of what lessons that they didn't know they needed to learn. And then they've also just kind of moved on, because I think one of the big things, especially when you only have so few games in the NFL, is you don't have a lot of time to process your wins or losses before you kind of move on. And in this unfortunate case, they had maybe too much time to process their loss. But I think they've taken kind of the right approach to take what they need to take and then just move on. It's a new season with functionally a new team.
Yeah. Also, I like how fans are like, you got to fix it. What lessons did you learn? It's like, bro, we know. Yeah, we got hammered.
Yeah, I mean, there were. Yeah.
Monty in South Dakota. Monty's got a big picture question for you, too. Monty, hi.
Oh, hey, Arif and Andy. Arif, congratulations on The Athletic.
Thank you.
And I was just wondering, which Viking stars, say if they went to UA High School from the Japanese comic My Hero Academia, what would this first be?
So sorry, that was so amusing. I missed the last half of that question.
Now, you would think that me, like the Asian dude, would be into anime, but that isn't correct.
It's more me, actually, that's into it.
So they went to UA High School. What would their quirks be?
Their quirks? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I guess Trey Waynes would be the guy with the jets in his calves, right? Because that's kind of his thing. I moves really fast in a straight line.
That's not a quirk. That's something that should be studied by science, man.
Well, in this anime universe, their powers are quirks.
Yeah.
It's don't worry about it. It doesn't have to be internally consistent. I would guess Anthony Barr is probably the main character who's got an extraordinary amount of power, but every time he uses it, he suffers maybe some physical strain, and then he has to recover. And, you know, some years Anthony Barr is a little bit injured, some years he's not. You know, Nose Tackle is probably the invisible person, right? They can do a lot. You don't tend to pay a lot of attention.
Which is
to
weird
them.
To think that Linval would be invisible.
Yeah, he's maybe the most visible person, you know, walking around. But in terms of on the field, you know, there's maybe that. And then Harrison Smith's really rangy, so he'd be the Spider-Man clone on that show, or the Frog, who has, you know, pretty extraordinary range. I don't know. That's pretty nerdy. I hope that helps.
That's pretty good for off the top of your head. Well done, Arif. All right, let's go to Chris in YZ, who's got a little bit more of a down-to-earth question.
Oh, thank
Chris.
Good morning. I was curious if either of your guests might know an anticipated payback time on our quote-unquote investment of $500 million to a convicted felon to help build his stadium, which increased his net worth by $200 million. When can we get, as a taxpayer, I'd kind of like to know when we can get some of that money back.
I don't know, around the seventh Monster Jam.
I've done a little look into stadium economics, as you seem pretty aware. It's not a very good picture, I think, for most stadiums built with public money most of the time. There are three cities that have seen a return on previous stadium investments: Seattle, New Orleans, and actually Minneapolis with the Metrodome has received more in inflation-adjusted tax income from after you take into account all of the replacement activity from people who have done these studies critical of public funding for stadiums. This is a whole new level of investment from both the state and the city. And I don't know that the state will see a return on those taxes. Wilf will obviously see a return
but,
on
But Arif,
his
just
investment.
Like the Superdome, we'll get a Super Bowl every 5 years.
Based off the comments I've heard from national media, I don't know that a Super Bowl is
oh, it's
gonna
so cold.
Again
oh,
here.
I had to stay in Bloomington. Oh.
If they had to stay in Bloomington, that's, you know, they wanted to stay close to the mall where a lot of the media stuff was, but I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the city get a return on their investment over the next 15, 20 years. I'm not an economist. I just can read studies and make mm-hmm. guesses and just guesses.
So you're not promising.
Yeah, I'm not promising okay. it, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the city get a return on the investment. It'll take 20 years after you adjust for inflation, maybe. But I don't think the state will, and obviously Ziggy Wilf will. Hey, so,
and by those 20 years, it'll be time for a new stadium. Arden Hills, baby. Here we come.
I was born and raised in Arden Hills. That's not to spare. It's my homeland.
You got to get a stadium.
I know. They need a stadium out there on that super fun site. What do you think of the stadium overall, though? Like, for fans, like, let's forget about in how much we're paying for it.
If we're forgetting that, it's gorgeous.
Is it gorgeous?
Yeah.
Do you love it?
Yeah, I love it.
World class.
Yeah. It's the stadium itself is a top three, maybe top two stadium. It competes, I think, with Jerry World over in Dallas. You get gorgeous views walking in. There's wide concourses. There's a bunch of concessions, but really the aesthetics of the stadium, I think, are fantastic on the inside. Very controversial, I think, on the outside, but when I've asked people, you know, what they think of what it looks like, it's really colored by their opinion of public funding, for the stadium. And so it's very difficult for people to, it seems like, anyway, for people to separate their opinion on public funding for the stadium from, like, the aesthetic value that the stadium provides. Personally, I think it's gorgeous, and I'm a little bit split on the public funding issue because I think, you know, if we fund a lot of cultural events at a loss, right?
Yeah.
And we're okay with that. It kind of depends on how we define sports as a cultural event. But the stadium, I think, is gorgeous. As a media member going into the press area, it's much better than, well, it's certainly much better than TCF.
Hey, and you can finally get a press box seat.
Yeah, they'll have enough room.
TBD.
And it is better than the Metrodome. And apparently also the press food is better, so, you know.
Well, keep them happy.
Yeah.
You mentioned the concourses. Like, do you remember the Dome back in the day? Like, you get a couple of we'll say wide-shouldered Packers fans walking perpendicular next to each other. It's like, you ain't getting through there.
I mean, people would wear pads to games.
Yeah.
Right? So they had narrow concourses that were very difficult to navigate. And here I haven't seen that problem at all. So, yeah, I think the stadium is really well built for its specific intended function.
Yep.
It seems pretty well built for the multi-purpose kind of half scam that they're running with the stadium, where I guess it does stuff other than football. It seems pretty well built for that.
Except for Metallica concerts.
Yeah.
I heard the acoustics were just atrocious.
The acoustics are not great. And just generally speaking, it's a fun experience.
Hugo in Minneapolis has called. Hi, Hugo. Are you there? You have a question that will get us back to playing back to the game.
Yeah. Good morning. I am a big biking fan since I lived in Minnesota since 1997. And I was present at the Miracle Game, and it was such a great experience to see that end of the game that, as a biking fan myself, I was very satisfied not knowing that the next game would be the end of the season. But at the end of the Eagles-Vikings game, I was like, well, you know, it was a great season. I was just very satisfied with the season. I was not heartbroken like I have in the past. But great topic for you guys. Don't want to hear about Donald Trump anymore.
Thanks for calling in, Hugo.
Wait, they talk about Trump on NPR?
No, I don't. That's weird. I haven't heard.
A couple of like different perspectives from fans on this is like some fancy is like, just Vikings again, just losing 38-7, blah, blah, blah. But a couple others like, I think see it from a healthier perspective. Is like, you know,
you lost the starting quarterback.
You lost Bradford. You had your backup quarterback. You lost Dalvin. Forgot about him.
Yeah.
you go 13-3. Second best record in team history, right?
Something like it was tied for second.
Yeah, 15-1 was 98. And then you have that great moment against the Saints in divisional round. It's like, we'll take that as a win.
Yeah, honestly, the reason that NFC Championship game was so disappointing was because of the expectations that were surprisingly set up by the Vikings themselves by having such an excellent season despite, you know, those kind of enormous setbacks of like losing your starting quarterback and running back and the home Super Bowl. You get so close to a home Super Bowl. And, you know, I think that this is kind of the lamentation of the Vikings fan, right? It's not quite the same as being a Lions fan or a Browns fan where you maybe start the season off with a little bit of hope and then halfway through the season you're just like, well, I'm out.
Flatline bad.
Whereas the Vikings just kind of traditionally have just strung you along and just convince you. I know you say that you want to keep your guard up, but, you know, just keep your guard down, be open to the concept of hope, and then, you know, they'll kick you in the teeth. And so that's like very uniquely Vikings.
Well, being a Browns fan is almost like Subway. It's like you kind of know what you're gonna get. You're always gonna be disappointed. But the Vikings are kind of like Quiznos, where it's like maybe this is the time where it is great. It's toasted. It's everything is fresh. But then you're like,
wow, a call out on specific brands, Andy. Yeah. That's
well, I'm just hoping to alienate as many sponsors as possible.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David in Minnetonka. Hi, what was your question or comment?
Well, I guess on the topic of the investments and the returns.
Okay.
I have not read whether the Vikings will be charging rent or charging fees to the state high school athletic associations for the use of the practice field for games and tournaments. I'm wondering if anybody knows the answer to that. And Cleveland Browns fans never have hope.
That's
fair enough. One of my favorite Cleveland Browns blogs is Waiting for Next Year, which is just a great title.
Now, is he talking about the stadium proper or TCO?
I think he's talking about the practice facility in Eagan.
Oh, okay.
In which case...
Which is amazing.
Right, yeah. Also phenomenal. World-class facility. Again, I've heard players say it's like second to Jerry World, maybe first. For the practice facilities, I am pretty confident, although I cannot like assure you with 100% confidence that they're not charging rent. For the stadium itself, the Vikings don't control that. That's the council, the metropolitan, you know, stadium.
Sports facility.
Yeah, sports facility. Yeah, that's it. I don't know if they'll be charging rent to the MSHSL. That's an interesting question. But for the practice facilities in Eagan. Mm. Plus, they will also be hosting a couple of high school games this year. I don't think they'll be charging rent.
Well, for the gates and concessions, I wonder what happens there, if they just, you know, take out operating costs and then it's split amongst the schools, or how that breaks down.
Yeah, I know that the MSHSL in the past has profited from the concessions in the Metrodome. This is a new arrangement, so I have no idea kind of what the split for that would be.
All right, let's get back to football. JJ, in Texas, you have called all the way from Texas. Hi, JJ.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm a big fan of your show.
Hey, thanks. Thank Dynamite.
Yeah, what was your question?
So, yeah, I get that all the time. So my question to you guys is, the Vikings offensive line, it's a big question mark for this entire team. And we're going to 2018 with a great team, possibly one of the greatest teams we've had in a long time. Just kind of getting y'all's opinions on what y'all think about the offensive line.
I'm kind of surprised it took us 45 minutes to talk about the biggest concern of the team. Yeah, the offensive line is a huge concern. Some of it's injury-related. We'll get Pat Elflein back. We were supposed to get Pat Elflein back by the third preseason game, then by week one. Now it sounds like by week three.
But, you know, it's the old cliche. It's like you never know about shoulder ankle injuries. Those things take time.
Yeah. He's been day-to-day for a couple months now.
We're all day-to-day.
But, you know, when he comes back, that'll be great. They just brought in Brett Jones, I think is his name.
I'm really surprised that I haven't called him Brent or Bert.
Right.
I'm just waiting for it.
Which is unfair. He started 13 games for the Giants. He actually looked really good. Pro Football Focus, which grades every player and every play, counted him as the 15th or 16th best center in the league last year, which is pretty incredible. So that's great. At tackle, you know, they've got a starter on Riley Reiff who's healthy, but he's actually looked pretty poor, I think, in the preseason and in training camp.
Seattle, he had a little bit of a, you know, coming back to Yeezus moment.
Right, yeah. And hopefully that'll Yeezus. And hopefully that'll return to form by the time the season starts, because I expect him to have a bounce back year. But at the guard position, there's a lot of concern. Mike Remmers is finally healthy. He should be fine. But at the left guard position, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe Brad Jones moves to left guard after Pat Elflein comes back. I don't know. But luckily, you know, we've got a bunch of people who've run a bunch of numbers on these things. How important are tackles? How important are guards? How important are centers? Guards don't actually move the needle all that much. And so there's going to be a little bit more pressure up the middle. Cousins is famously not that great against pressure. But we tend to overstate how often this happens and the impact of it happening when it does happen. So I'm concerned about the offensive line. But maybe when it all comes together by the time the season starts, it's not going to be as bad as it seems. I still don't know about the right tackle position. I kind of glossed over that. But it may end up being better than it seems. I would say it's not going to be a top 15 offensive line, but it's also not going to be a bottom five.
Now, was it Nihilist Arby's that crunched the numbers on the O-line? Nothing matters.
No, it was the Pro Football Focus guys, actually, the Eric Eager.
Left guard Tom Compton, yes, the pride of Rosemount, I don't think is great. That's why I think Brett
he
Jones
struggled,
was a good pickup.
Sure.
Like Isadora at the right tackle spot, I don't think Rashad Hill has shown anything that is appreciably better than Brian O'Neill. Yes, O'Neill has been playing a lot against the twos, but also, you know, the rookie.
O'Neill has been playing
pick.
Really fantastically, except a little bit in this last game.
He's been holding his own.
Yeah.
He's surpassed my expectations of him coming in.
Yeah.
Nick in Denver. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Great. You have a question for us. What is it?
Yeah, I was wondering, realistically, how many games do you guys think Mike Hughes will start in the slot? And how many? And how well do you think he'll perform this season?
One of my hot takes is about Mike Hughes, who actually I did not appreciate that pick much at all, because I thought the Vikings should focus actually on that guard position. I just said wasn't all that important because that's a hole, whereas they ended up getting some more depth. But even though I wasn't particularly a big fan of the strategy of the pick, I did like him coming out of college as a player. And on the practice field and a little bit in the preseason, he looks, and this is the part that's the hot take, he looks like he's on track to be a defensive rookie of the year. He looks phenomenal. He looks like he's already sort of the second best corner on the roster. Again, this is practices, preseason. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, that doesn't always translate. Very often doesn't. But, you know, he looks great. The problem, of course, is that there's a lot of depth at the position. The starters, two of them were established in Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes. You mentioned the slot position. And Mackenzie Alexander doesn't have a lock or a hold on that position, but he's looked a lot better. I would say I'd put the over-under probably at 9, maybe 10 games. So 9.5, I guess, is how you traditionally run that. And I would maybe take the over. Hughes is really talented. It'd be difficult to keep him off.
Do you think
the field.
He starts right out of the gate with Mac seemingly more dinged up than Hughes is?
No, because Hughes also missed practice, right? I mean, Hughes missed the last game, so did Mac. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something this year like they did last year with Terrence Newman, where they rotated between Mackenzie Alexander and Terrence Newman in that slot spot, and so you'd kind of share responsibilities based off of what, you know, either of them might be good at.
Just building on what you said, that Hughes just came in and looked ready for the position, where, you know, a lot of hype was around Holton Hill being like, oh, well, he should have been a second-round pick if he didn't have the weed issue.
He's
6'3". Yeah. But, he's 6'1". So Hughes is like a month older than Holton Hill, but it's like it's light years difference of where they're coming in on the cornerback spectrum. Like Hughes is up here, Hill is down here, and I think Hughes, like, we're forgetting as well his return ability. Just like,
right.
if you want some nice, nice video, go look up at Hughes returning kicks at Central Florida. It's like national champion Central Florida. It's like, ooh.
Oh, and one of the additional things about Hughes, not to stick to one topic for too long, is that
it's okay.
When he was at Garden City Community College, go Bronkbusters, he came in late, learned the defense, and started by week three. When he came to Central Florida, he came in 2 weeks before the season started and started right away. He picked up the defense instantly, and it's not super complex, but it's also not a simple defense. For him to pick it up that quickly for a national championship team like Central Florida is really remarkable. And then Mike Zimmer's mentioned that Hughes might have picked up the defense faster than any rookie defensive back he's had, and they draft a lot of first-round picks under Mike Zimmer.
A couple of things I want to fit in before we wrap it up here. This is the first season with the new rule that a player can't lower his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. The new helmet rule. How's it been looking in the preseason? How have teams and players been dealing with it?
I feel like the first 2 weeks were bad. Week three wasn't as terrible in terms of how many they're called.
Yeah, and I think that's just because of the nature of the preseason and the nature of how they're going to attempt to call the rule. They're also introducing a bunch of new referees, which is like, it's great that you're introducing a new controversial rule at the same time. But they called a lot in the first couple of weeks. Referees and officials apparently had some kind of meeting, come together session about the rule. They were always going to meet after the preseason was over to talk about which of those calls were legitimate, which weren't, and they were pretty trigger-happy to throw the flag on in those situations. And so the helmet rule, as it's played out in the preseason, looks really bad. A bunch of stuff that is clean, relatively speaking for football, that probably shouldn't be called under the text of the new rule was called. But I think that'll be resolved by the time the season starts. My bigger concern is actually the roughing the passer penalty on sacks. Not even on...
We know what it's called.
Yeah, it's the Aaron Rodgers
rule. Aaron Bird Bones Rodgers rule.
where driving a player into the ground when they're defenseless is a penalty. And I'm actually kind of fine with that conception of the penalty, but it seems that they've broadened the definition of a defenseless quarterback to include moments when they still have the ball in their hands, which I am remarkably opposed to.
Also, Neil deGrasse Tyson says that it's physically impossible to stop that momentum of going forward. Like, come on.
I mean, yeah, I think really what they're attempting to do is try to change approach angles, which is going to let quarterbacks do a lot more things because you have to aim off the center of mass and stuff like that, which, great, that's going to be fun. But they've taken two sacks away in the preseason. And normally, you know, you'd be like, well, maybe it's the same thing as that first rule. But they actually fined Antoine Williams for his sack, which I've never heard of roughing the passer on a sack because he's not a passer. And so if they fine him, that means they reviewed it and determined that it was worth not just the penalty, but an additional fine.
They fined him like a third of his preseason salary.
Yeah, right. And he doesn't make a ton of money. And what's even worse about that is that he had, when he contacted the quarterback, he had both feet on the ground, which means he wasn't launching. And then during the tackle, his knee also hits the ground, which means that there's a bunch of weight that's not on the quarterback. And he still got popped for driving his weight because at the end of the tackle, you know, his feet lift up a little bit as he's, you know, because of physics,
well,
right?
Maybe they fined him for taking the knee. They said they're going to do that.
So that is more concerning to me than the new helmet rule, which is getting a lot more press.
More concerning because it's more confusing for players.
It's more confusing for players. It takes away what seemed to me, you know, maybe I'm not usually accused of being very old school, but which seems to be clean. Like, I don't know, defenders have a right to hit a quarterback when they have the ball physically in their hands.
That's kind of the point of the game.
Right. The debate for me should be how much more protection do they get once the ball leaves their hands, and previously it was one step, and now it's like before that moment. That's more concerning to me.
Maggie has an important question. She called in. I'm in a fantasy football league, and I want to win, but I feel like I need to have at least one Vikings player on the roster. Who should I draft?
Dalvin.
Dalvin's a good pick. The Vikings are very run heavy. They've been run heavy. New offensive coordinator, maybe that'll change, but I wouldn't be surprised if they focused on getting touches for Dalvin Cook either through the air, which if you're in a PPR league, that's extra points, or on the ground. For me personally, Stephon Diggs. He was undervalued kind of earlier before the preseason started. Now he's kind of moved up. I think he's being drafted ahead of Adam Thielen, but his fantasy projection is still something like 900 yards, and that's kind of how he's being drafted, as if he'll get 900 yards. But he's an underrated red zone threat. Touchdowns give you points, and I think he'll crack 1,000 yards this year, so I think he's being undervalued even still. So I would go for Stephon Diggs.
All right, Stephon Diggs or Dalvin Cook there. There you go, Maggie. All right, most experts, Eric in Nome says, most experts have the Vikings at the top of their power rankings. I know that ESPN came out with their 100 top players, and there are a lot of Vikings in there. Do we have a good team this year?
It's certainly an extremely talented team, top to bottom, especially among the starters. Maybe they don't have as much depth as, say, the Eagles. I would say the Rams on defense have individually some more talented players, but I don't know that they'll cohere as well as the Vikings have, who have had, what, like nine of the same starters for four straight years. It's kind of unprecedented in the NFL.
If the Rams start to 0-2, that thing is going to turn into a mutiny.
Yeah,
it's going to be great.
A bunch of locker room risks, right? And then offensively, they have a bunch of talent, too. I think if you just kind of gave, you know, players equal points for how talented they were and ranked them across the league, the Vikings would be near the top, maybe at the top. The real question is Cousins going to perform like last year or, you know, 3 years ago, right? You know, he seems to be very supporting cast dependent. I just mentioned the supporting cast seems pretty good. It's a good team. The question is, it the best team? It depends on how you define that. I would say the best team is very often defined by the quarterback as well as the supporting cast, but primarily by the quarterback. And the Eagles, and this hurts me to say because I'm not an NDSU fan, coming from Grand Forks, North Dakota, the Eagles probably have the best quarterback roster combination in the NFL right now.
All right, we have to wrap it up there. My guests are Andy Carlson, host of the Vikings for the Win podcast, and Arif Hassan. He covers Vikings for The Athletic. Thank you both for joining me. And people should check out your podcast, The Zone Coverage Football Machine Podcast. It's a great name.